The first arrivals at Larry Lovett's dinner party stepped out onto his terrace just after sunset. In that magical half hour when the soft, dimming light turns the sky and water the same mother-of-pearl pink, and palaces along the Grand Canal seem more than ever to be afloat. Hubert de Givenchy, his back to the Grand Canal, sat on a cushioned banquette chatting with New Yorker Nan Kempner. The Rialto Bridge rose dramatically behind them, illuminated against the darkening sky. A waiter with a tray of drinks approached the Marchese Giuseppe Roy just as he was making a lighthearted remark that elicited one of Countess Marina Emo Capodalista's distinctive piping peals of laughter. "Guess what?" cried Dodie Rosecrans, clasping Countess Emo's wrist. The wide-eyed San Francisco socialite and movie theater heiress had just arrived from a week on the Dalmatian coast. "I've bought a monastery." It was early September. A year had passed since the split in Save Venice. Lovett had launched his own charity, after all, and named it Venetian Heritage. He had gone about selecting a board of directors like a croupier scooping up blue chips, amassing a pile of aristocrats and royals in such quantity that the letterhead of Venetian Heritage read like a page out of Debrett's. 21 of the 50 names on it had titles: one duke, one marchese, one marchesa, one baroness, the usual counts and countesses, and no fewer than 6 highnesses, both royal and serene. Save Venice, in contrast, was down to its last titled board member, a baroness. Lovett made gloating reference to the state of affairs in a letter addressed to Save Venice president Paul Wallace, noting that Bob Guthrie's upcoming Save Venice winter event in New York is under the patronage of a minor Savoy royalty, presumably as he is now lacking a major English one. Earlier in the summer, Venetian Heritage had played host to its first 4-day gala. Lovett had scheduled it in June to coincide with the opening of the Venice Biennale, when the cream of the international art world descended on Venice. The gala, fully subscribed at $4,000 a ticket, had been a triumph, considering the select crowd it had drawn, the ultra-private doors in Venice that had been thrown open for it, and the money it had raised. Larry Lovett had every reason to be pleased, and he was. Nonetheless, the continued existence of Save Venice rankled him, and Save Venice, as he well knew, was far from dead. At the time of the tumultuous split, the next Save Venice Regatta Week gala had been less than a year away. It was going to become clear very soon whether private Venice would remain as accessible to Save Venice as it had been in the past. The Guthries were about to start reaching out and making calls when the telephone rang. B. Guthrie picked it up. "It's Volpi," the voice of Count Giovanni Volpi boomed at the other end. He was calling from his villa on the Giudecca. "I hear those clowns are now saying the doors of Venice will slam in your face."
"I've heard that too," said B. Guthrie, "but I don't really..."
"And the reason they give for walking out of Save Venice?" Volpi continued. "Because you were throwing too many parties? This, coming from Venetians who always bitch about their seating, those freeloaders who never pay a penny for anything?" Count Volpi's famous contempt for his fellow Venetians burned through every syllable. "Venice is like a courtesan who takes the money and gives nothing in return, stingy, greedy, and cheap. They're nothing but scavengers. It wasn't enough that they slandered you all summer, calling you crooks. That kind of viciousness is intolerable. It was a moral lynching. They're lucky you haven't seriously sued them for it, and frankly, I think you should."
"Well, Giovanni, it's been a nightmare, but we..."
"Listen," said Volpi. "I'm calling because you've asked me in the past if you could use Palazzo Volpi for the Save Venice ball, and I've always said no. Well, I've changed my mind. If you think it would help, it would be my pleasure to lend the palace to you next summer for your ball."